young woman as an old lady. The same thing had happened with Clara. Nona had taken a step back, and in an instant seen her treachery whole and clear. The new picture didn't erase the old. The bump was still a hole, but now it was a bump as well. The old lady was still a young one, but now she was old too. Clara was still her friend, and now an enemy also. Nona saw too that the truth had been hers for the taking. Sister Apple's bitter pill. All that had stopped her asking Clara about the throwing star and unraveling the whole tale was her own desire not to speak of Amanda and the forest where she had stood, clothed in blood, revealed to the world as a monster hungry for the kill. One truth for another, and they wouldn't be standing in this cave. But that itself, like most truths, had proved too bitter for the mouth to speak. Epiphany? She saw herself, a child of 9, the dried blood of 6 royal soldiers still in her hair. She saw the child-taker Giljon with one hand on 4-foot's reins, the cart and cage behind him rattling up the lane. She saw Grey Stephen bent in conversation, her mother weeping. She had stared at the memory so long, so many times. Could it be possible to see it another way?
"So you think you can walk the path now?" Ruli asked. "Even here?"
"I think so," Nona said. "I just need to get angry enough." Rage could throw her at the path back in the convent, close to the ship heart. Rage would throw her at it now. Enough of it would. And this time she wouldn't try to slow herself, wouldn't try to stutter to a halt and gain her balance. She would take the speed and aim it down the path and take all the power it would give her and own it. All she needed was the rage. She reached for it. But where a fire had once blazed, only an ember remained. Had her mother truly saved her?
"Stay here," Darla said, looking down. "You don't have to go out there. Or we could scatter and run."
"No," Nona said. "If they ran, Darla would be the first caught."
"We can wait," Jula said. "The poison will wear off, and Tarkax can fight, and—"
"And Sister Talla will come with the others," Ruli finished.
"Go!"
Zol managed to put some heat into the word. She understood. If you wanted to win against the odds, you had to carry the fight to the enemy. You had to take them unprepared.
"I have to—"
But something dark and vast reached up to grab her, and before Nona's mouth closed on the last word, she was gone. Nona had been yanked from her body so swiftly, she hardly had time to feel it begin to fall. She saw nothing, not even darkness, felt nothing save the pull and a sense of rushing. Then, in one moment, she slammed back into herself. She saw a paved yard, Hart Hall on her right, the ancestors' dome rising above the dormitory block to her left. Nona had been poured into someone's skull, but not into her own. She leaned onto her crutch and took another limping step. Hessa. Hessa's thoughts rose around Nona, a tide that threatened to drown her. Nona shouted that she had to go, screamed to be released back to the cave. But Hessa just took another step, as if she had heard nothing. Hessa had known it would be Isht. Even so, finding the gate to the undertunnels unlocked put a cold terror in her. She had shared every excruciating moment that Nona endured when Isht had held her hands tight about her neck. It might have been Nona's throat that was closed, but Hessa's lungs had burned too, striving for a breath that wouldn't come.
"Why would you think you could come back?"
Hessa whispered. It made no sense. Did the woman want to die? "What are we doing here?" Gena hugged herself against the ice wind, weaker now than it was, at the end of its reign, but still able to carry a sting.
"You need to go to the Abbess. Tell her Yisht has broken into the underground tunnels again."
Hessa had been put in Red Dormitory while Grey Class ranged.
"The Abbess? You're mad. She'll kill me. It's the middle of the night."
Gaina's habitual temper hadn't been improved by Hessa waking her with a pinch and cajoling her to come out into the night despite her protests.
"Tell her Yisht is back. If you don't, she really will kill you. This is serious, Gaina. Deadly serious."
"Ancestor's tits." Gaina spat on the ground and took off running in the direction of the Abbess's house.
"You better be right about this. Hop along."
Hessa turned back to the gate and sighed. She had taken threads from everything of Yisht's that Nona had brought her. Blood, hair, clothes, a boot knife. And each bright and coiling thread she had pulled taut across her mind, feeling the woman's impotent rage as she jolted westward into her barrel. What had scared her wasn't the depth of that rage, but how cold it ran. Hessa pushed the gate and it swung open, the tunnel beyond yawning darkly and swallowing the light from her lantern. She sighed again and began her long and painful descent of the stairs. None of them had imagined for a moment that Yisht would dare return after her efforts had been discovered. Quite how she had evaded the Grey Sisters watching over the convent's approaches, Hessa couldn't say. But now the woman would find herself up against Red Sisters. She must be insane to think she could reach the ship heart, let alone escape with it. The threads had started to tremble as Hessa sought sleep that night, a vibration so slight that she hadn't been able to unravel it from her own nerves. Nona had seen something terrible two mornings before, death and dead men. Sister Kettle was involved somehow, but Nona had become so hardened to fear that whatever had happened wasn't enough to make the full link between them. Even so, it had left Hessa shaken and unable to sleep that night. This night, despite the trembling of threads, exhaustion had taken Hessa to her dreams. And the threads had jerked her from a nightmare, yanking so hard that the pain filled her sight with sparks for several moments. At the door to the Shade Chamber, Hessa stopped and leaned on her crutch.
"What's she doing here? Why this passage?"
Hessa knew that Yisht's efforts had been discovered. There had been nuns in and out of the guest chambers all through the evening of the day that Grey Class left to go ranging. They had to have discovered the shaft and set guards while measures were taken to protect the ship heart and to challenge Shirzal about the matter.
"What good am I going to do?"
Hessa shook her head and went on down the tunnel, ill at ease on the uneven surface.
"If falling over is the worst that happens to me..."
She spoke to herself to give courage. Before her, the threads that led to Yisht snaked away into darkness. 10 yards on, the threads veered into a fissure in the wall, so low that Hessa would have to abandon her crutch and crawl.
How did she...
But of course, even though the fissure was so tight that it daunted Nona, the novices had proved to Yisht she would fit through it. Hessa went to all fours on the muddy floor, or to all threes. Her withered leg would do nothing but drag. She turned around, shuffling backwards into the fissure on her behind. She pushed the lantern ahead of her, praying it wouldn't fall, praying she wouldn't get stuck, praying that Yisht had already been apprehended and wasn't already wriggling her way back through the very same gaps. The distance to the larger tunnel was perhaps 20 yards, but squeezing through it took a lifetime and left Hessa flat on her back when she finally emerged, gasping and trembling. At the tightest spot, Hessa had seen that the rock had been scooped away, leaving strange, smooth gouges, widening the passage.
A rock worker, then.
The rarest of the elemental Marjal talents. Yisht's unique qualifications were becoming apparent. Hessa angled her lantern up. The shaft in the tunnel roof led to a boarded-over entrance. She looked down the tunnel. At any moment a knife could come winging out of that darkness and hammer into her, and Hesse's story would be over, drawn into the great story of the ancestor, a raindrop in an ocean. She should just wait for the nuns. The threads running invisible through Hesse's fingers said Yisht was not so close. But had she come alone, or did the black tunnel hold some accomplice, waiting, silent, and ready to cut throats? With a sigh, Hesse began to shuffle along the tunnel floor, inch by inch, foot by foot. The seat of her habit would be worn through.
"If I survive this, Sister Mop will kill me."
She carried on, knowing that in the shadows about her lay the spot where Yisht had all but choked the life from Nona. Some minutes later she sat looking up at the entrance to the crawl tunnel that joined her passage to the one where Yisht had been digging when Nona had found her. A knotted rope dangled from the hole, presumably set when the nuns came down to investigate. Without it, Hesse would have had no chance of getting up there. Even with it, she had to touch the path in order to put away enough strength in her arms to haul herself up. She lay in the connecting crawlway, panting. She preferred not to touch the path. Its energies disquieted her, and filled her with dreams of power that fitted awkwardly at best into her ordered mind. Threadwork suited her far better, had greater subtlety to it. She enjoyed working so close to the path but not allowing its force to dominate and overmaster her. In its way, threadwork was every bit as powerful as pathwalking, closer to the wonders Abbess Glass achieved without violence or threat. Pathwalking was closer to the blunt and brutal methods of the Taxis, not that they were unique among the Sis for that. A gentle pull on Yisht's thread revealed her to be close now, but focused on some task. Hesse could almost see her, high in the rising cut she had made over long weeks of digging. She was digging once more, but pausing every now and then to touch the stone, changing it into something less resistant that fell easily beneath the swings of her pick. Hesse had never gathered such strong and detailed impressions from a thread before. She stared at her hand where the threads twined, curious. Then she felt it. The pulse of the ship heart, thrumming through the thread, thrumming through everything, even the stone itself. Eager, she wriggled on through the narrow passage, seeing the space around her fill with detail as the ship heart built upon the power within her. She saw the threads of other people's passing, Nona's, Yisht's, three nuns whom she might identify if she were to pick out their threads and examine them. By the time she reached the opening into the wider passage beyond, strewn with rubble, Hesse was starting to see threads in the rocks themselves, their lineage running back across the eons into ancient seas or the fires of the earth. She even saw the threads of the waters that had once run here, carving out these tunnels, threads that led on to rivers and oceans, up into the sky, down to percolate through dark soil and run in secret rivers. Hesse shook her head, banishing the visions, focusing on her own task. She understood Yisht's accelerating progress now. The rock worker had used her martial powers to aid her excavation, but as she grew closer to the ship heart, its aura enhanced her talents, and she was able to tunnel ever more swiftly. Hesse saw then why no thread warnings could be set around the ship heart, or the tunnels about it, as had been done with the Neuguin knife that Nona hid. The beat of the ship heart rippled out like waves, unhindered by thickness of stone, and would wash away any such workings. Only true threads survived, and no entanglement would last for long under such conditions. Another rope dangled from the tunnel's far end, anchored on an iron spike driven into a crack in the wall. One of the nuns who came down to investigate lacked the athleticism required to make the journey without help. No red sister, then.
Nona! Nona!
Nona shook her head, spluttering, icy water dripping from her face.
Where? They're gathering again outside.
Jula leaned into view, water canteen in hand. Above her, the roof of the cave lay rippled in red and shadow as the sun sank behind the ridges.
You fell! You've been lying there for ages, muttering. We thought the Segrin root had got you, or the Black Cure, or both.
Nona rolled her head to look towards the entrance. Darla was there, hooded, and filling out Tarkax's sealskins pretty well, Tular in hand.
She's been letting them see her so they don't think we're escaping out the back tunnel, Ruli said.
Nona tried to get up at that, shaking the last strands of Hesse's thoughts from her mind.
There's no back tunnel, Jula said, glowering at Ruli. We've looked. Let's get you up,
Ruli hooked an arm under Nona.
Wait,
Nona shouted it loud enough to draw Darla's attention from the slopes.
I was with Hesse. I mean, seeing what she's seeing. Yisht is back at the convent again. She's trying to steal the Shipheart. Hesse's going to try to stop her.
Yisht? What are you talking about?
Darla came stomping across, stepping over first Tarkax, then Ara.
How do you know this?
How can Hesse stop her?
Ruli demanded.
She'll get killed.
Jula looked shocked. Nona sat up.
She thinks she can do it. She's not scared anymore. That's why I'm not there. We only join when something really bad is happening to one of us.
Hell, she should be watching us then, Darla snorted. We've got 12 kinds of bad right outside.
Nona frowned. There are no coincidences among the Threadbound. She repeated Sister Pan's words. The nun had told them that the rhythm of their lives would start to match, and here they were, both face to face with death.
Hesse thinks she can beat Yisht?
Rula asked, doubtful.
Yes, but she can't do it,
Nona shook her head.
It's the Shipheart. It does that. It gives you power, makes you think you're indestructible. It's like the path. But Yisht will kill her.
Darla returned to peer out at the slopes, knowing that to those out there in the day's last light, she would be invisible within the cave's gloom.
Why is this happening?
Ruli helped Nona up.
I mean, why now? Why is Yisht going for the Shipheart, just as we are trapped and about to die?
We're not going to die, Nona shrugged off her range coat.
They are.
She flexed her fists and felt the flaw blades form. And what better chance would Yisht get?
Half the sisters are out with Tallow to escort us back. The best of the Grey Sisters are absent too. And if news of Sister Kettle has reached the convent, then the Abbess may have sent more sisters to help. It's the ideal time to strike.
The soldiers who went looking for Tarkax's kills are back. The full 12 are on the slope again. They're getting ready to make the move.
Darla kept her voice low, but it shook with nerves. Nona started to advance.
Let me...
But Hesse's terror reached out and seized her. Nona fought the thread bond, knowing she would only be able to watch Hesse's fight, knowing her friends needed her in theirs. But the bond's strength proved too great. Her body fell, helpless, with her enemies gathering to strike. And once more, Nona became bound within Hesse's mind, a silent witness. Hesse let herself down the rope, good leg questing for the floor, the lantern dangling from her elbow on its strap, smoky and hot. She made it, and collapsed to the smooth, wet stone, the muscles in her arms burning. Lifting her lantern, she cried out in horror. Just an arm's length from her face, and unseen during her descent, Sister Flint sat with her back to the wall beneath the connecting passage. Her long neck lay at an odd angle to her shoulders, the bones making an unsightly bulge beneath dark skin, where the angle grew most acute. Her eyes stared at nothing, reflecting the lantern's flame, and a thin red line of drool ran from the corner of her mouth.
"Go back!"
Nona spoke into the clamour of Hessa's thoughts and went unheard. Hessa looked towards the entrance to Yisht's shaft, glowing with the distant light of the assassin's lantern. The sound of pick blows and crashing rock echoed back and out into the main tunnel. She returned her gaze to Sister Flint. She had been a Red Sister, as fine a warrior as Sweet Mercy could produce, and Yisht had killed her.
"Go back!"
Nona shouted it, but struggled to be heard against the beat of the Shipheart's pulse. Hessa raised her hands. She could see the threads that she had drawn from Yisht hanging in her fingers, golden, silver, scarlet, and black. Pull on this golden thread, and a stream of memories would come rushing to flood her with the woman's blood-stained history. Pull it far enough, and she would see the ice, see Yisht even before her memory began, swaddled in furs and innocence. Pull on that scarlet one, and she could change the woman's mind. Pull hard enough, and any opinion she might hold would be overturned, however firm it might be. Pull this silver thread, the one that anchored her to her soul, and the woman would come undone. Hessa knew she could do it. She held Yisht's life in her hands, and the Shipheart gave her all the power and clarity she needed. Hessa edged to the shaft, scraping herself across the rubble, cutting her hands, tearing her habit. Dark splatters amongst the broken rock caught the light of Hessa's lantern and returned it. She rolled and touched a finger to one glistening patch.
Blood!
Yisht hadn't escaped unharmed from her encounter with Sister Flint then. A tremendous crash echoed down the shaft, and moments later rock dust billowed out, obliterating Hessa's vision, making her cough. Silence. Then, as the dust began to settle, the sound of loose rock being pulled away. Hessa shuffled the last foot and peered around to see up along the steep slope of the narrow slot that Yisht had carved. The whole passage glowed. Light, from some source far brighter than any lantern, caught the last of the dust and turned it into gold. At first Hessa thought Yisht must have broken through to the surface, but as the dust continued to settle, she saw the woman's blurred black outline, and on every side the light shafted around her, as if a miniature sun were before her, level with her waist. And if it were a sun, then it was the Hope, rather than Abbath's red star, a young sun full of white and gold. And the heat, even at this distance, it made Hessa sweat.
"She'll never get out with it."
Hessa squinted against the brightness. The light changed, shadows ran and swung, the quality of the Shipheart's pulse altered. Yisht turned to the side, her fingers red around the Shipheart's glowing sphere, her bones dark within the rosy haze of her flesh.
"Leave!"
Nona shouted it at Hessa, and for a moment she thought that she might have noticed. Hessa watched, just one eye at the very edge of the cut, her resolve blown away like focus mist in an ice wind. Yisht would never get out with the Shipheart. She started to pull away. Yisht held the Shipheart before her and thrust it towards the wall. The air whined as if a thousand mosquitoes had gathered to feast, and the rock flowed away as though it were liquid mud. Yisht stepped forward into the void.
"No!"
Hessa understood now. Yisht might be a Marjal half-blood, or even a prime, but her rockwork was only sufficient to aid her in digging, weakening the stone ready for the pick swing, or allowing a slow and silent start to the shaft she had sunk beneath her guest quarters. Perhaps it also gave her intuition as to where the tunnels and fissures ran. But as she had come closer to the Shipheart, her skills had been magnified, allowing the last yards of the cut to be hewn away in just a few hours, and now, actually holding the Shipheart, the rocks moved to her will. Hessa had no idea what such a gift must be costing Yisht. There was a reason that the Shipheart lay buried, rather than in the hands of a nun. But whatever it cost her, it also afforded a Marshal rock worker their escape. She could tunnel out, closing the shaft behind her and emerging at some prearranged location, no doubt to be met by Sherzal's troops. Hessa reached her arm around the edge of the cut and pulled on all Yisht's threads at once. The warrior came flying backwards out of the hole she had created. The opposite wall arrested her motion with a crunch that made Hessa wince. For a moment she felt guilty. She hadn't meant to injure the woman. Then ridiculous, knowing exactly what Yisht would do to her, given a chance. In the moment after that, Yisht's thoughts and memories flooded her, drawn out when Hessa pulled on the golden thread of her being. Images washed over Nona, trapped at the back of Hessa's mind. One image, burning with importance, caught her attention, and Nona seized it as it passed. The amulet she'd taken from Yisht, the sigil black against a tide of moments, recollections, sensations. And with the amulet's image came understanding. A sigil of negation, fashioned with vanishingly rare talent by a master of the art a century before. Yisht's key to the defences on the Abbess's house. Her secondary mission, to claim the secrets there, now abandoned. Pressed to any enchantment, the amulet would erase the magic, or at the very least, disrupt it. Yisht unfolded herself slowly, the light from the Shipheart breaking around her as she straightened to expose it.
"Kill her!" Nona shouted. "Quick!"
This close to the Shipheart, and with threads drawn from Yisht's own blood, she could snap the silver tie that bound Yisht's spirit, and the woman's warm flesh would topple to the ground, empty. Hessa worked quickly, the deft fingers of her mind sorting and plucking the threads that connected her to Yisht.
"Put it down."
Hessa only mouthed the words, but Yisht found herself lowering the Shipheart to the ground, not against her will, but because her will had changed.
"End her!"
Nona knew killers. Yisht was a killer. Hessa was not. The killer always has the edge.
"Don't give her a moment!"
Yisht raised a hand, and above Hessa a thickness of rock fractured away from the ceiling. There was no time to react, no pain, no memory of the impact, just the knowledge that the world had turned upon its side, that the lantern oil was flaring somewhere around her legs, and that she now saw Yisht through a single eye, full of blood. Nothing hurt, and that worried Hessa most of all. Yisht approached down the cut, a slim knife in her hand, her gait uncertain, as if her collision with the wall had broken something inside.
"The personal touch,"
Hessa thought the words, but her lips scarcely moved, and her breath sputtered out, wetly. Nona threw every ounce of her will against the bond that tied her to Hessa, but all that happened was that the world started shaking, as if Yisht had decided against the knife and raised all her earth magics to crush her foe.
"Nona!"
A slap that made her cheek blaze.
"Nona!"
screamed at her face, full of desperation. Nona didn't open her eyes, they were already open, but she started seeing through them again. Darla was shaking her.
"Wake up! They're coming! All of them! Buy me a minute!"
She gasped the words out, and Darla dropped her in shock.
"What?" "One minute,"
Nona sat.
"I need to help Hessa."
Her shadow lay before her, thrown by the descending sun, stretching out to the rear of the cave where it joined the general gloom. Nona made a fist and extended one finger from it, sheathed in a single flaw blade.
"Wait! We're sending her out!"
Darla shouted from the cave entrance. She ducked back.
"If they're going to kill us anyway,
Why are they so keen we send you out?
So I don't get killed in any fighting. Once sword starts swinging, anything can happen.
Nona started to cut at her shadow, slicing it away from below her feet.
Ah! Gods damn it! That hurts!
She had known her blades cut shadow. That lesson had been taught to her at the academy. She hadn't known that cutting her own shadow would hurt as much as cutting her own flesh.
What?
Ruli stared in horror at the ragged edge of Nona's shadow and the strange twisting of the light about the gap.
How will that stop them? Not them. Her.
Nona slashed again, a long tearing motion screaming out the agony of it. Behind her, Darla scooped up Ara's stiff body and carried her towards the cave mouth.
We had to subdue her with poison, she called out.
What are you doing?
Jula joined Ruli, dagger trembling in her grip. Whether she was talking to Nona or to Darla was hard to say.
I'm breaking rules.
Nona threw herself onto her severed shadow before it could escape into the greater dark, and then hurled herself back at Hessa, terrified that she would be too late, terrified that she would throw herself along the threads of the bond forged in such sorrow and so long ago, only to find a nothingness, just the vacant space that her friend had once occupied in the world. The point of Yisht's knife waited just a finger's width from Hessa's eye. Yisht herself sat on the rocks just before her. In her other hand, Shirzal's assassin held the shipheart, a blue-white ball of wonder, its surface a multi-layered thing across which floated the ghosts of forms both familiar and unknown. She kept it pressed to a rip in her tunic, the flesh beneath torn and bloody.
I'm not given to cruelty, child.
Nona realized that Yisht was speaking.
But you reached into my mind, and a violation like that cannot go unanswered.
Hessa could smell meat burning, and knew it was her, but still no pain reached her. The knife at her eye terrified her, but she had drawn her head back as far as she could, and still the point advanced. Nona found herself lost, an impotent observer, her plans ridiculous. Somewhere she had hands, and those hands were full of shadow, but her ambition to draw that unleashed shadow through to Hessa lay so far beyond her talent she had no idea where to start.
Help me, Hessa!
And where Nona's orders and demands had gone unheard and unheeded, her cry for help caught her friend's attention, even beneath the heel of Yisht's revenge.
How? Help me draw it through!
She tried to show Hessa what she needed.
Easy.
Hessa felt herself drifting away, beyond pain, beyond struggle. She heard the ancestors' song, many-voiced, and more beautiful than anything she had ever imagined possible. Even so, her friend had asked for help. With the shipheart so close, it seemed simplicity itself to take the dark threads from Nona's clumsy fists, beating ineffectually at the walls between them, and to pull those threads through the bond they shared.
We're Giljan's children.
The thought rolled across the smoothness of her mind, as the ancestor's song grew louder.
Sisters of the cage. Stay.
Nona tried to hold on to Hessa. She could feel her leaving, but had no sense of where she might be going or how to follow. The point of Yisht's blade traced a hot line down the side of Hessa's face, and in that moment of hurt, the shadows suddenly swirled, rising from the ground so fast and thick and black that the broken stones rattled with their passage. Nona's shadow broke from Hessa's and threw itself at Yisht like an extension of her will, rending, tearing, screaming its hatred in registers above hearing. From the fading, blood-soaked view that Hessa's eye provided, Nona saw Yisht fall back, open wounds torn across her, shredding her jacket. She twisted, and staggered away, thrusting the ship heart at Nona's shadow to ward it off. Nona saw her shadow grow huge and monstrous, as if it were the shadow of her true self, barbed with hatred, swollen with rage. Yisht stumbled back, retreating up the shaft she had spent so many hours and so much sweat cutting into the bedrock. The shaft that led nowhere and offered no escape.
Coming! Wake up! I'm awake!
She opened her eyes.
Nona!
Jula, reaching out, her face without hope and full of goodbyes. Outside, the tramp of many feet approaching. An arrow glanced from the wall and rattled on into the cave. Nona shook her head, rising smoothly into a crouch. The rage she had needed now filled her from toe to head, her body vibrating with it.
I was born for killing. The gods made me to ruin.
She batted aside an arrow and snatched another from the air before it reached Jula's neck. She tucked it into her belt. Nona launched herself into motion, driving up and forward, aimed at the bright entrance where tall figures crowded like the shadows of teeth in the cave's open mouth. Ara lay at their feet, a helpless offering. Arrows shot blindly into the gloom, ricocheted from the walls, clattering around her on the stone floor. Behind her, she heard Darla shout as the novice found her courage and defiance. Something sped past Nona's ear while she closed the distance to the enemy, overtaking her, spinning, and scattering the sun's last rays. Clara's throwing star, released from Ruli's considerably more skilled fingers, found the face of the foremost soldier. As Nona's feet drove her forward across the uneven floor of the cave, she let her anger, every piece of hurt and rage and despair, throw her mind towards the path. Nona had no trouble gathering what she needed. She had felt Hesse leave, felt her sweet and clever soul join something larger and more distant as streams find the ocean. Hesse had gone, her last mile not limped or shuffled, not even walked upon her own 2 feet, but run. Hesse had not feared dying, but Nona feared living without her. As she hit the path, Nona made no attempt to slow herself or find the balance she had always sought. Instead, she used her speed as she had on the blade path, letting rage propel her where serenity had held her back. Riding the twisting impossibility of the path, shooting through the convolutions and relying on instinct to keep her on course, whatever came. At the same time that Nona's mind ran the path, her feet drove her towards the soldiers crowding through the cave mouth. She angled herself towards the wall, leapt at it, and kicked off, gaining height. Her speed and the unexpected nature of the attack, coming at the day-blind men from the darkness of the cave, took her over the points of their swords. Her target, quicker than the rest, managed to raise his blade, but she twisted about it, her movements in the physical world somehow complementing and complemented by her simultaneous running of the path. Nona flew, arms extended, and hit the man in the face with both fists. Her flaw blades, 6 inches long and spiking from her knuckles, gave her the purchase to leapfrog him, bringing her feet to his shoulders and springing away, her blade slicing clear as she jumped. A sword hissed towards her while she sailed over the last of the soldiers. She managed to swing her arms wide before her as it cut across her path. There was a moment's contact, a bright metallic sound, and she came to ground tumbling across the rocky slope, with sections of neatly divided longsword clattering down around her. Nona fell from the path at the same moment as she hit the ground. The impact against rough stone could have broken bones, at the least torn flesh, and left her too injured to put up much of a fight. Instead, wrapped in the path's power, Nona left a channel of shattered stone in her wake and rolled to her feet, crouched in the fighting stance. She didn't know how many steps she had remained on the path for, but there were many of them, the energies building inside her with each one. Past the 10th or 12th step, Nona had noticed that energy was bleeding off her, and that each new step built her reserves a little more slowly than the one before. But still, the build-up was inexorable and exhilarating. Such a magnificent feeling, in fact, that had she not fallen then, she would never have voluntarily left the path. Crouched there, with the soldier still turning to follow the line of her attack, Nona knew that the impact with the ground had saved her life. Even now she struggled to own what the path had given her. The raw energy of it smoked from her skin. All about her the rock trembled, and the broken fragments, shattered loose by her passage, now started to rise, each making slow revolutions as it lifted from the ground. Nona opened her mouth, and the scream that came from it was larger than her body. A hammer that smote the rock, cut down the soldiers like wheat before the scythe, and rattled away down every gully, even reaching out to smite the distant walls of the spine and come echoing back. The scream tore her lungs and throat, spattering bright crimson blood across the rocks before her. Nona felt herself separate into broken pieces, each an image of herself, resonances in time as the power she struggled to contain vibrated through the stuff of reality. Ara had been broken into three pieces by the path energy she used on the day Zol came to the convent. She had struggled to pull herself together. Nona stood in nine parts, some captured in the moments as she had tumbled across the rock, others held around her, some just rising into the crouch, others lifting from it. At the same time as Nona's borrowed power threatened to scatter her across the slope, something stabbed at her chest. A cold, sucking thing lanced into her, a hungry void siphoning off some of what she had taken. Nona knew that in a heartbeat each piece of her would fly apart, torn one from the next by the path's energy. She needed to pull herself back into one unified whole, to find a common thread that would bind them together. All she could think of, all that was in her mind as she watched the soldier she had jumped from, still in the act of falling, his head a ruin, was that she ached to kill the rest of them. It was enough. With a snap like some deep bone clicking into place, Nona stood whole, the path's energies owned, bound into her flesh, armoring her, strengthening her. All around her the rocks, once suspended, began to fall. Nona tore at her breast where the coldness somehow knifed through her newfound strength. Her habit shredded, and Yisht's amulet fell from the torn inner pocket. Nona batted it away before the iron sigil of negation could drink any more of her power. She slowed the turning of the world, dug deeper into the moment than she had ever been. The falling stones seemed to crawl towards the ground, and when she launched herself at the tall axeman who stood closest to her, she hurtled through the air fast as any spear was ever thrown. Her cry of rage had set him falling, but she didn't give him time to hit the ground. Nona moved among the mailed bodies of her foes, spinning and swinging, opening disastrous wounds wherever her hands passed. Shields and chainmail offered no resistance to her blades. With the path power bound into her, muscle and bone, a well-placed kick could shatter a grown man's hip through his armor. Her blood sang with the violence. Ducking beneath the swing of a sword, she clawed through a woman's knee and threw herself onto the largest of their number, a 7-foot warrior thick with muscle. Nona sprang up the height of him. The punch she delivered to his throat held such force that her arm passed through his neck, scattering the small bones of his spine in a crimson splatter. The red work of killing carried on. At some point in the midst of it, Nona took the arrow from her belt and stuck it into the eye of the man who had fired it at her. Nona had hidden her secret so long, worked so hard to be normal, but the truth lay all around her in crimson arcs of gore written out across the rocks. She had come to Sweet Mercy, bearing the title Murderer, and had come to that deed from a cage where her first act of slaughter had placed her. Even before that, the children of the village had seen her for what she was, a fox among hens. "Billam Smithson tried to hurt me," she had said. "This was inside him." She must have been all of 3 or 4 years old. She twisted away from the lazy descent of 2 swords and a thrust spear, dividing between a forest of legs, slicing into the meat of a thigh, opening muscle and arteries, scoring the bone. The novices, the nuns, the abbess herself, would all know her now for the monster she was, a rabid animal unfit for the company of decent people, holy or otherwise. An axe scythed towards her, the wielder white-faced and desperate, more likely to wound a friend than to connect with Nona. And yet, by luck, he caught her on the turn with almost no time to act. Her blades divided the hilt into tumbling sections that she dived through. The axe head flew free and bedded itself in the chest of the woman whose knee Nona had ruined, who was still in the act of collapsing. The men who had been at the fore of the rush into the cave now returned to a scene of carnage. Apart from the 4 emerging into the light, only 1 soldier stood uninjured. The 4 paused, an ill-advised hesitation that allowed Nona to leap at the face of their companion and bear him screaming to the rocks amid the wreckage of his comrades. When Nona lifted her head, gore dripping from her hair, the 4 survivors took a step back. Darla's Tuller came down in an inexpert but devastating swing, nearly beheading the leftmost of the men and embedding the blade deep in his sternum. Dula appeared with her arm around the shoulders of the next, screaming and stabbing furiously at his neck. Ruli felled another of them by smashing a rock, 2-handed, into the back of his knee. The last man started to run, angling away across the slopes. Nona plucked a blood-slick spear from its fallen owner and threw it. The path energy was burning out of her limbs, and the spear fell heavy. Even so, it flew true and took him between the shoulder blades, carrying him to the ground. Nona stood, panting, blood dripping from her hands, blood in her hair, the taste of it in her mouth, blood running down her legs, blood cloaking her habit as if she were already a Red Sister. She looked up, her gaze traveling slowly across the twitching of the injured and the stillness of the dead, dreading to see the condemnation in her friends' faces. The 3 of them stood over the bodies of the soldiers they had brought down. Jula, with her mousy hair wild and sticking up at all angles, her face, neck and shoulders spattered with gore. Tarkax's knife glistening in her hand. Ruli raised her face, the rock in her hands dark with gore. She had shattered the soldier's head when he fell, and the splash of it decorated her in scarlet. Darla freed the Tular with a wet wrench and held it above her head. All 3 of them stood for a moment, panting. Then, as one, they roared out their victory and, raising her hands, Nola howled it out with them. She stood, her heart pounding, eyes full of tears, her chest full of that strange mixture of sorrow and exultation that she could never explain, a feeling that words could neither shape nor own. It took her a moment to remember Hessa. Her death didn't feel real yet. Nona stood there, casting no shadow, and found she could feel nothing for her friend. Some emotions are like that, too big to be seen from within, like the ice patterns written across empty miles, which makes sense only from a great height. She slumped, staggering as weariness caught up with her. She would find that distance in time, and there would be sorrow enough to make the dead weep. And she feared it. Nona went across to Ara, who lay by the edge of the slope, rope around her wrists, where one of the soldiers had started to bind her. They hadn't trusted the poison to keep her immobile, but it was still doing a good job. Nona met Ara's eyes as she sliced away her bonds. They're all dead, Ara. Nona looked down at herself, still red with slaughter. She couldn't bring herself to speak of Hesse yet. She wanted to set off for the convent, to run all the way, to kill Yisht with her own hands.
Some are just wounded.
Ruli came across, empty-handed now. Nona became aware of groaning behind her as Ruli spoke.
We should do something about that.
Darla raised her bloody tular and eyed it speculatively.
They're no threat,
Jula said, the sleeve of her habit red and dripping.
We need to get the others moving. Then we can go.
The slope stank of death, an ugly smell. Let them be. Nona shook her head.
Help me with Ara.
She made to stand. As she moved, the gleam of sunlight on metal further down the gully caught her eye. The last edge of the sunset still caught the devil's spine, and its light beaded on the smooth curve of a steel shoulder plate as it came into view. The man walking towards them was armored from head to toe, lobstered in interlocking steel, his helm a cylinder faced by perforated doors. Nona was amazed anyone could walk in such a weight of metal.
"Get Ara back into the cave!"
she shouted. At least five of the soldiers still had breath in them, though perhaps none would last the night. She crouched by a woman, a scar-faced veteran, her breathing shallow. The point of an axe head bedded in her ribs where it had driven the links of her chainmail into the wound, and shook her roughly.
"Who was that?"
"Can't you tell?"
the woman grimaced.
"Wait until he gets closer."
"It's Raymel Taxis."
Nona understood. Only a gerund could carry such armor. She advanced down the slope, skidding on loose stone, into the gully where a small stream gurgled. When Raymel drew closer, Nona once again got that shock of realization as her eyes understood the scale of him. The sword he drew from over his shoulder must have been 6 foot in length and heavier than her.
"It always pays to bide your time with witches."
Raymel set the point of his sword upon the ground.
"Perhaps I should have brought more soldiers. I would have preferred you captured so we could spend a while together. But my father keeps a tight rein on his troops, and he felt that you're not worth breaking a promise to the Emperor over. Not this year, anyway." "I disagreed."
His voice was as deep and rich as Nona remembered. But beneath it, just at the edge of hearing, it seemed that she heard other tones, other voices whispering the words, voices that were older, crueler, and more hungry. Nona backed off, matching Raymel's advance.
"I thought you were a fighter, little girl."
3 more strides.
"You seemed keen enough at the Kaltus, both times."
Nona continued to back away.
"Not so brave now you've spent your magic."
The trailing tip of Raymel's sword rattled through the loose stones by the stream, scoring the bedrock with a discordant noise. Nona blinked. The ghostly echo of the path hung in the darkness behind her eyes, but it lay beyond her reach, like a spent passion. She might be able to reach for it by the next morning, but not any time soon. And her flaw blades, she had seen that they barely scratched the man, warded as he was by the devils that shared his skin. She kept backing away. Raymel stopped, advancing.
"Trying to lead me away from your nest, mother bird?"
He turned his head to stare at the cave, and the body sprawled beneath it. Darla vanished into the cave mouth, Ara in her arms. A moment later, and she would have been out of sight.
"All this?"
He raised a gauntleted hand to the steel plates over his neck, where she had cut him years ago.
"Was over another nestling. I had to find out her name after I got better. Sida, a dirty little peasant, just like you. That's not something a Taxus heir dies over.
He beckoned Nona closer.
Are you still angry about her? I bet you are. You should come and show me.
Nona snatched up a rounded stone from the stream and kept backing away.
No?
Raymel paused.
I'm glad she died. My regret is only that I didn't get to do it, and in my own time. But Father just had her hanged, and quickly. Not one for scandals, my father.
He sheathed his sword and held his arms wide, as if daring her to attack.
Do you remember how she screamed?
At the back of her mind, where Nona had expected anger to flare, an image of Sida rose instead. Her broad face, with its mixture of timid and friendly. If she had been here, she would be treating the wounded. The soldiers that Nona had torn open. Sida had wanted to mend, not to break. Nona took another step back. Raymel shrugged, his armor squealing in protest.
It looks as if some of your friends won't be able to run away as fast as you can.
He started to march towards the cave, striding at a pace most men would have to jog to keep up with. Nona threw the stone. It bounced off Raymel's helm. He didn't turn.
Ruli! Jula!
Nona screamed.
Darla! He's coming! He's coming for you!
Fear ran through her, cold water through the marrow of her bones. For the first time in an age, she felt the chill of the ice wind, ragged now as it lost its strength, but still icy now that she had no range coat.
He's coming!
She didn't know what to do. She wanted them to run, but if they left Ara, Zol, and Tarkax, then Raymel would make the gullies ring with their screams. Darla appeared at the cave mouth, Tarkax's tular in her hand, still sticky with blood. Her jaw dropped as she took in the size of Raymel, striding across the corpses. Nona cast her exhaustion aside and broke into a sprint. She caught Raymel 5 yards before the cave and threw herself upon him. Leaping and reaching as high as she could, she drove her flaw blades into the small of his back. One set punctured the steel plate armor, the other skittered across, leaving bright lines scored into the metal. Dragging herself higher, Nona reached up, slashing with all her strength to lodge her second set of blades just below his shoulder blades. Raymel bellowed and began to turn. If the blades were hurting him, though, it was nothing more than scratches. There was no blood gushing, or even leaking from the slot she had driven through his plate mail. She climbed higher as he turned, cutting and hauling her way up, an ice climber sinking her axes. A great hand reached back for her, large enough to wrap about Nona's head and crush it like a nut. Releasing her grip, she grabbed a thumb and finger, each so thick in its gauntlet that she couldn't close her own fingers about them. Hanska's speed enabled her to climb his wrist and reach the iron summit of his elbow before the grasping hand could close on the air where she had been. Locking one leg about his elbow, Nona slashed at Raymel's visor, putting every ounce of her strength into two blows, a rising left-to-right slash, and, as she fell away, a descending right-to-left slash. The obdurate steel resisted her blades until they met the first of the many perforations through which the warrior saw the world. Then, tearing in, the flaw blades managed to cut from one hole to the next several times before jolting out to score the surface once again. Nona turned in the air and landed on her feet, stumbling immediately and sprawling backwards across an injured soldier, clutching his stomach wound. From her place on the ground, she saw that the crisscrossing of her blades had cut out a number of diamond-shaped sections of the visor, and she could now see one glaring eye, the cheekbone below, and part of Raymel's nose. but his flesh had resisted her blades better than the steel, showing just red scratch marks where his face should have been cut into